It's the illustrious from high above Wyoming mainstream media. Joined by Mr. Misdemeanor himself, the Saratoga Sledgehammer. Starting your day the right way on the Independence Network. It's time for the morning show with your hosts, David Iverson and Jailbird Joey.
And it is finally Friday here on the Independence Network. Morning show coming at you. Got my good friend David Iverson with me here today. Of course, Jailbird Joey running the show once again. And I got to tell you, I am exhausted. I have been trying to get my campaign for county commissioner off the ground. And all these late nights of drinking and driving really taking it out of me. But I think I'm now perfectly qualified because, hey, I got it down. I'm out there putting the bottles away, bumping into stuff, going the wrong way in traffic, and I think I got a good shot at this election. What are you thinking, David?
I think that's an absolute requirement for being a county commissioner, at least in Northeast Wyoming. You know, unless you're out boozing it up, driving around town, bumping into things, and trying to evade police, or at least evade prosecution, you don't have a chance of sitting on a county commission. Or so says Christy Haswell.
Yeah, well, you know, it's the only way to make sure that you're truly qualified. And this seems to pop its head up every once in a while. We're going to get into the details on that in a second. If you're not aware, Sheridan County Commissioner Christy Haswell had been arrested for DUI on Wednesday, I believe, and also for hit and run. And we'll talk about all of that stuff. I don't know exactly what the details of all of it are, but I'm seeing a lot of Facebook comments that are very reminiscent of old wrong way Bill Novotny. I'm seeing a lot of, she made a mistake, have some grace. Public officials are just people too. We shouldn't be putting people on blast. Now, we had this conversation a couple of years ago with the Bill Novotny event, and you're absolutely wrong because you don't call for grace when it's any of the rest of us. It's only when it's one of your good red coat buddies. So that was the interesting factor to me, that there is still this contingent of people, the Gail Simmonses, who have this go with God excuse whenever one of theirs goes astray. But any of the rest of us, yeah, we get thrown to the wolves if we, you know, stub our toe on the wrong coffee table. That's the hit and run they're worried about.
Absolutely. I mean, if it's one of us, it's pitchforks and torches. Throw them in jail. They deserve everything that they get. They knew what they were doing before they hopped in the vehicle. But if it's one of their red coat pals who happens to be in power and happens to align with their political agenda, then it's exactly what you said, Joey. The Gail Simmonses of the world say, oh, you know, it's just a mistake. You know, you have to have some grace. You know, I mean, everybody makes mistakes, and she'll learn from it, and, you know, she'll come out the other end better for it. That's bullcrap. It's exactly the same thing that we saw with Bill Novotny. You are an elected official in a position of trust. That is, voters said, yes, we think that you are qualified to represent us, that you possess the qualities that we like in a representative. And what we find is elected officials like wrong way Bill Novotny, who is currently the Johnson County Commission chairman and was busted for driving blackout drunk on the wrong side of the interstate with an open container, eluding police for 8 miles, and blew a .187 on the interstate, and it was even higher when they got to the police station. Now we have Christy Haswell, who is the former chairwoman of the Sheridan County Commission. She's not the chairwoman anymore. And just a slight correction, I think she was busted Tuesday night because we got the word Wednesday morning that she had been arrested.
Yeah.
So, I mean, no big deal there. But a lot of questions surrounding that. She gets boozed up on a Tuesday night, which, by the way, you know, most people save their boozing for the weekend. You know, Friday nights, go out with the boys, have a few beers. Most people don't get tanked up in the middle of the week. but not Christy Haswell. So she goes out and boozes it up, apparently tries to drive home, hits a parked car, and then leaves. And so she was eventually charged with DWUI, or at least this is what the Sheridan Press is reporting, and hit and run. So first of all, and this is the argument that you and I both made during the whole Bill Novotny thing, how many chances did you have to make a good choice there? You know, you were evidently at a party or a bar or something, and you know that you're a county commissioner, that you hold a position of public trust, and you could have very easily called somebody and said, hey, I had a little bit too much to drink. Could you give me a lift home? Or better yet, because you are one of the enlightened ones that sits on the county commission, you would have made arrangements ahead of time so that you didn't have to worry about this. So you could say, hey, you know, I'm going out to this party. Would you mind giving me a ride so I don't drive? That would be the responsible thing that any upstanding public official would do. Not in Sheridan, Johnson County, of course. So you would make an attempt to be responsible. But that is the very last thing that Christy Antoinette Haswell is responsible. And now we have proof. The only thing that I can say, Joey, is now she's qualified to be arrested.
Well, unfortunately, she's only qualified to be arrested. And another thing that comes up a lot in these comments is she should be held to a higher standard because she's a public official. Now, Absolutely. Let's say that's not true because, you know, there's a lot of people out there, got a lot of feelings, making a lot of statements. But what I would love to see is whether they're a public official or not, anybody that's pulled over for DUI or any other crime, just be held to the same standard that we are. You know, Bill Novotny spent about an hour and a half in jail and got a slap on the wrist. He was facing four or five charges that got dismissed and it got all buddy-buddied. And I'm hearing that Christy Haswell didn't spend any time in jail. Normally, you would spend at least the night. They can't release you until, you know, you're sober enough to sign your bond paperwork. You're out on release. You have to agree to certain terms, and you have to be sober in order to do that. They always ask you in court, are you under the influence of any drugs or alcohol while you're making this plea? So there's, again, another concern about special treatment, two-tier system of justice there. And that's pretty concerning. As far as you said, she had the opportunity to ask somebody for a ride, make a better choice. She's also very aware of the copious amounts of money that Sheridan County and the city of Sheridan dump into, oh, I don't know, Goose Creek Transit, little bus for the hub. She knew that there were opportunities that have already been well, you know, paid for and taken care of to haul her biscuits around town, you know, turn it into a party bus. But yeah, there's a lot of layers to this.
There's even a private cab service in Sheridan. So it's not like there aren't opportunities there. And, you know, maybe, okay, and I can't believe that I'm saying this, but in the Bill Novotny situation, there is no public cab. And I don't know of a public cab that operates in a town that drives from Sheridan to Buffalo, but I'm sure that they could find one. But there is a public cab service. There's lots of opportunities for, there would have been lots of opportunities for her to get a ride. Now, a couple of things. Details are kind of scant right now. The only thing I'm seeing is what's been published by the press. And I don't know if she was released early from jail. So best I can tell, in Sheridan, if you get popped after normal business hours, you spend the night in jail, and they do arraignments at 2 o'clock the following weekday. So, you know, it's the whole thing. Don't get busted on a Friday night because you're going to spend the whole weekend in jail. Or don't get busted on the weekend because you'll spend the whole time in jail. But the arraignments don't happen until about 2 o'clock here in Sheridan. So, yeah, I'm really excited to go to the sheriff's department and get all the charging documents and start that whole process. You know, it's as you well know, Joey, it's kind of fun going to these public offices and getting documents, the dirt, as it were, on our public officials. So I'm really looking forward to that. Should be a heck of a lot of fun today.
Now, there's a few aspects of this that I really want to just at least touch on, if not really get into. This, in my opinion, is not holding a public official to a higher standard. It's holding them to the standard that, well, they swore an oath to and that we would expect out of our representatives. But I see also a lot of comments of thank God no one was hurt. Well, when you swear an oath to the Constitution also has portions in it that say things like you cannot be deprived of, you know, life, liberty, or property. And that's what she put in at, not at risk, just at risk, you know, people's lives and safety, but she did damage private property.
Yes, she did.
And that, in my mind, that's pretty egregious. There was no due process. There was not a system of checks and balances to say which car she could bounce off of when she was drunk and swinging her biscuits around Sheridan. And the other thing that's kind of concerning is because it was hit and run, even when nobody's injured, those have the ability to be raised to the level of a felony with extenuating circumstances such as drunk driving. So we're now facing a situation where there's a possibility procedurally where she will no longer be qualified for office if she's charged and convicted of the felony. Now, I don't know that that's very likely. I don't see this court case playing out in Sheridan, but you know, stranger things have happened. I think she's too close to it for a conflict to be avoided if it's in Sheridan. But what really should happen here is what would happen to the rest of us. You would be charged with misdemeanor DUI and felony hit and run, and you would have to go through that process. And in this case, it's just ironic. She's facing the potentiality of not being qualified for that office herself.
Well, another interesting wrinkle in this is sources have told Cowboy State Politics that they've already moved Diana Bennett, who is the Sheridan County attorney, has already made the move to appoint a special prosecutor. And her choice is also very interesting. I was a little concerned that it might be Joe Barron over in Crook County. Of course, Joe Barron is the only elected Democrat in that corner of the state. And he notoriously got Bill Novotny off with a year of probation and a $1,000 fine. Bill Novotny didn't even have to appear in court, by the way. Joe Barron fixed that for him. But what we're being told is that the prosecutor, Diana Bennett, Sheridan County Attorney Diana Bennett, is going to appoint, or at least ask the commissioners to appoint, is the Park County attorney. Now, that is the same guy who went after our pal Nina Weber.
I am sure he'll attack this one with a little less zeal, but it's just a checklist for them. Oh, I did everything required of me by law, and this was just the agreement we came to. All this crap about it. It's a first-time offense. And it looks like I'm pushing on a pretty regular basis. Hey, here's all the possibilities. Take the Wolf situation. That could be theft and damage of state property. I'm not saying those things are a reality. I'm saying that there is a potentiality and a pathway in our laws. We keep talking about actually enforcing our laws, and this is another example of that. I don't think it'll happen, but hey, hit and runs have the potentiality of becoming felonies very quickly, and a felony makes you unqualified for office. And with all of the concerns that Kristi Haswell has about people being qualified for office, even if she doesn't get a felony, yeah, this is one of those things that watch what you say, because it could come back and bite you. And it really comes down to what the people believe. And so now you're a hypocrite. And that's why it's so funny that, you know, the standard seems to be if you want to be qualified to be a county commissioner, a chair of a county commission, or the president of the Wyoming County Commissioners Association, you got to be a raging drunk that likes to drive around and flaunt your cruising ability while you're blackout drunk. So we'll definitely have to keep an eye on this one, see where it goes. But I'm going to see if we can get some more information, but I believe it's going to turn into the same thing as a Bill Novotny. It's going to be, you know, swept under the rug, slap on the wrist, and it's up to we, the people, to make sure that this has some sticking power for the election season coming up. Whether she's up for re-election or not, it still can touch people that they support, that they work with. And I think that's important to, you know, not attack people with, but hold people accountable on.
Exactly right. And one more point on this. Nobody should be asking for Kristi Haswell to receive a harsher penalty. And though she did violate a position of public trust, and I personally think that she should absolutely step down from her office. I mean, if you're going to be all drunked up and hop in a car and drive around town and hit a vehicle on your way out and then run away from the accident. I mean, clearly you have no respect for private property and you have no respect for life. If you did, you wouldn't have been drunk driving. But the only thing that we should be asking for is for her to be treated exactly the same as any of us would. And, you know, there are different levels of a DUI. I don't think that there should be. But like you said, you know, hitting a parked car and driving away, that's a more serious offense than blowing a .09. Okay. I mean, they're both DUIs. One is a DUI with a hit and run, but you're still drunk driving. And that's what the law is. And all of us should only be asking for her to receive the exact same penalty that I would or that you would or that any other private citizen would. And, you know, unfortunately, in Northeast Wyoming, we've seen situation after situation going back years to where public officials are, like you said, given a slap on the wrist and not treated to the same standard. Sheridan in particular is kind of interesting because, of course, Dave Kinski, when he was the mayor, got busted for DUI, and he ended up firing the cop that arrested him. And it was a giant controversy here in town, and he largely escaped that whole thing. I mean, basically, it was a slap on the wrist. So we're going to have to get the charging documents and follow this thing and see where it goes. I have faith that the justice system, or the legal system, as it were, will work out appropriately and that she'll receive the proper punishment. But I think we should also be vigilant and make sure that those things happen.
Yeah, I can't wait to see her defense in court. I think all she's going to have to do is point out that the officer is not qualified to hold that position, and then she'll be let go. I may not have as much faith in the justice system as you do, but I don't know. It worked for her last time. Just point your finger, say they're not qualified, and let the judge make the decision. We've seen how that plays out, and I think we're about done kicking that horse for now. Looks like... just like she did to Wyoming Republicans, Liz Cheney's been invited to a funeral, but she probably won't attend. One of her most ardent supporters, of course, has passed away. O.J. Simpson dead at 76. And at least now O.J. Simpson can rest in peace knowing his wife's killer is finally dead.
That's true. You know, he could really slice up the competition. Oh, too soon?
Yeah, Stabby McSinn. I don't think so. I think we've been having this conversation since 1994. Like I said on my show yesterday, some people think he did it, some people think he didn't. The courts made a decision, but now he has to face judgment that Johnny Cochran can't even help him out with. So good luck there, killer. And
one thing's for sure, Joey, he did spend his entire life looking for his wife's killer.
Yes. Yeah, every time he was passing a mirror, he got real close. And obviously, my opinion, and this is, it's funny that we're talking about that as well. The justice system does what it does, wins, loses, fails, succeeds on its own merits, whatever. But yeah, there goes old OJ. And it's just weird that it's connected to Wyoming. You could not make some of this stuff up. And in 2022, when he came out in support of Liz Cheney, it was just we did a lot of work here to make sure that she was on the downhill slide anyway, but that was one of the death nails of all the support you're getting. And it's a bunch of money from prominent Democrats on the East Coast and O.J. Simpson.
And O.J. Way to go, Liz. Simpson. You know, I have a different view of that whole case. I personally think that he was probably responsible for it. But, you know, we are all entitled to a fair trial with a jury of our peers. And, you know, however that played out, the prosecution in that case, I would say that they definitely dropped the ball, but they helped pick that jury. And so, you know, they went through the whole process and the jury said, not guilty. And, you know, Benjamin Franklin famously said, it's better that 100 guilty people go free than one innocent person go to jail. So that's the system we have. And I don't think that we should advocate for, you know, anything else. You know, as horrible as that situation was, and it was probably the worst example of our system working correctly, he was acquitted by a jury. And, you know, later on, he was sued and found liable of, or a wrongful death. Yeah, libel in a wrongful death suit is what it was. So I don't know. I mean, I personally think he did it, but he was acquitted by a jury. It's not like the case was dismissed by a radical judge or something. And so, you know, that's one of the, one of the prices we pay for the system we have. You know, I have a lot of similar thoughts surrounding the Constitution. Let's take the Second Amendment, for example. The price you pay for being able to own and possess and bear firearms is the possibility that somebody might shoot you. That's the possibility of your freedom. I mean, that's one of the prices that you pay. So there's a give and take with all of our rights. And okay, so you know, OJ walked free. Yep. I think we probably most of us agree there's a good chance he did it. Anyway, it's just a different way I have of looking at our justice system.
Yeah, and I lived in LA at the time that was all happening, and there was no escaping the fact that there was a cloud of, if you convict OJ, we're having another riot. And that may have influenced the jury, it may have not, but I agree with just about everything you said. I constantly tout, hey, utilize the system, the broken system, to address the broken system, to fix the broken system. That may not have turned out to be justice, what happened in the OJ case, but it was our process. And the bottom line is he is now facing a trial that there are no questions on the evidence, and that judgment will come swiftly for him. It's actually probably happened. We're sitting here in human time, but where he's standing trial, all things happen in all time. So, yeah, that's fun. But you brought up the Second Amendment and your responsibility and the potential implications of owning a gun, but it sounds like it's about to get a little harder for Americans to own guns, at least if they don't go to gun stores. Something about the gun show loophole, which is not a thing.
No, definitely not.
Is being challenged or attacked. I don't know. You got the details on that. Looks like Biden's stepping out of his lane and going around Congress again, from what I'm reading.
Well, this is just a long history of what the ATF does. There's a lot of things that administrations want to do, namely Democrat administrations, that they can't get done legislatively. That is, you know, get Congress to pass a law. And so they get the ATF to write new rules. And we've seen a number of these come out of the Biden administration. One of them out of the Trump administration, which, again, you know, Trump did not do everything right. He pushed for a rule for bump stocks to be banned. Now, that was later overturned. But the Biden administration, they've done a number of things. The pistol brace ban, which I think is currently in court right now. That all of these gun cases, they go back and forth. You know, this judge will rule with it. This judge will rule against it. And then it gets to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court has done a pretty good job of standing up for our Second Amendment. And before I get into this, I want to explain, and I talk about this a lot on my program, but it's called the Bruin test. And in the Bruin case, the Supreme Court ruled that whatever gun regulation you want to pass has to align with our historic interpretations of the Second Amendment. So if our founders would have looked at that regulation and said, no, that's bad, then you can't pass it. So the Bruin test says that everything, and it's kind of like, Justice Scalia's comments that the Constitution says what it says and it doesn't say what it doesn't say. So an originalist interpretation of the Constitution. If the regulation you're passing doesn't comport with our historical tradition of firearms, that is, the founders, then it's unconstitutional. Well, the Biden administration, of course, they don't care about history only in the sense that they can rewrite it. So they've attempted to pass a new rule. And let me just read this gobbledygook to you. It's way confusing. But here's what their new rule says. Quote, consistent with the Gun Control Act and existing regulations, the proposed rule also defines the term personal collection to clarify when persons are not engaged in the business because they make only occasional sales to enhance their personal collection or for a hobby, or if the firearms they sell are all or part of a personal collection. This proposed rule further addresses the lawful ways in which former licensees and responsible persons acting on behalf of such licensees may liquidate business inventory upon revocation or other termination of their license. Okay, so that's a bunch of gobbledygook to say that all gun sales have to pass a background check. There's a couple of problems with this. First of all, as you rightly pointed out, Joey, there is no gun show loophole. There isn't one at all. If you're at a gun show and you buy a gun, you have to have a background check. If you are at an auction and you buy a gun, you have to have a background check. If you are at a fundraiser and you buy a gun, you have to have a background check. Think about it, Joey. How many Republican events have we been to when there's been a gun in the auction and they tell you straight up, okay, so if you win this, you have to go down to the gun store and do all the paperwork. That is the law. So where they are claiming that it's a loophole is how it was described by my sponsor, Scott Weber from Gunrunner Auctions, in an article in the Cowpie. I'm going to have to talk to him about talking to the Cowpie so often. But anyway, he explained it this way. So let's say that you're a dealer at a gun show, and a guy walks in and he says, Joey, I have this M1 Garand that my grandpa left me, and I'd like to sell it. The wife says I can't have guns in my house, and so I have to get rid of it. Would you give me $300 for it? And you say, well, wow, it's an M1 Garand. Heck yeah, I'll give you $300 for it. You hand over the money, you take the M1 Garand, slap an $1,800 price tag on it, and put it on your table. Now, under existing rules, you have just engaged in gun trafficking because you didn't check out the gun before you put it on your table. And most people who sell firearms at a gun show are FFLs anyway. And by the way, if they make one mistake on an FFL form, they could have their entire license revoked. I'll give you an example. One of the times I went into the gun store to buy a gun, I don't remember which one it is. Unfortunately, I lost it in a tragic boating accident. But I filled out the form and I screwed up the address. So I had just recently moved to, you know, in Buffalo from a house to my former apartment. And so I just crossed out the address and wrote the new address down there. Well, the salesman at the gun store freaks out and he goes, oh God, we got to redo this whole thing. And he goes, by the way, does that new address match your driver's license? And I said, well, you know, as a matter of fact, I haven't switched my driver's license. And he says, okay, so leave here, go over to the DMV, switch your driver's license to your new address, come back, and we're going to redo the form. The reason he did that, not that it was I was being dishonest or he was being dishonest in any way, there can't be one mistake on that FFL form. And so if you think that there's a gun dealer at a gun show that is going to risk their FFL, you're out of your friggin' mind. That's just not going to happen. So the only loophole they're talking about is private sales. And the problem here is that this rule is so vague that they could stretch it to say, Joey, if I sell you a gun, oh, I'm selling it for profit, therefore it has to have a background check. That's the problem, that it can be construed to mean private sales. Because you can say that any sale is an effort to create profit. So that's where the whole problem with this thing is.
Yeah, and it puts a undue burden on private commerce, which I don't believe the federal government has the authority to regulate. I know the Commerce Clause says they can regulate commerce between the states, but not within the state or between private citizens inside of a state. So that's an interesting constitutional concern there. But how would a private seller, aside from, I don't know, downloading a form, know all these things, how it has to be filled out properly, where to send it, access to the database? And even with the guys that do it professionally, you know, let's just take Sportsman's Warehouse down there in Sheridan. I bought a 22 rifle 2210 there to do some plinking with some of our good friends out there, and I had the same problem. I have my PO box on my driver's license, so they're like, no, that's not going to work. Ended up having to go, and I get that this qualified and I'm glad that it did, but I was kind of surprised. I just went to the front of the store and got a what do you call it? Hunting, that extra tag you have to have.
Oh, the affidavit?
Whatever it is. Not the affidavit.
Conservation stamp.
Conservation stamp.
Yeah, there you go.
And that qualified as identification confirming my residence that was not on my driver's license because they had access. They could show that I had hunting tags issued to my home address in the past from the Wyoming Game and Fish. They used that data to issue me the conservation stamp and I could buy the fire. What private seller has access to all that plus the digital submission apparatus to send this to the federal government? The other problem is it's the federal government. Not that I'm going to talk about freaking out that they're overbearing. We'll do that all the time, but their bureaucracy is so slow. Even these professionals that have all this digital access to instantly file your request, it takes forever. Sometimes it takes up to a couple of weeks, even when there's no problem, to get the green light. So that's one of my problems. The other one is, yeah, okay, fine. Selling your firearm may be for profit, but in order to really make a profit, at least one the IRS would be interested in, you would either have to sell a really expensive gun. I think it's the first $9,000 of income is untaxed. So you'd have to sell a fairly expensive gun or be engaged in the business of selling firearms. At that point, you would really need to be an FFL. So my concern here is, yeah, you can't sell a gun to a buddy. You can't buy a gun to gift to your son for his birthday. If you die, your gun collection may end up being seized by the federal government because it can't be transferred because the legal owner of those guns is deceased and can't do the background check on the transfer. So it goes into all these other things where the federal government is kind of like a lot of Wyoming state laws, writing a very vague rule that's poorly defined that has a lot of, I wouldn't call them unintended consequences. I think they're very intended, but implications that'll just ultimately, and I believe Joe Biden said it, is we're just trying to keep guns out of the hands of domestic abusers and criminals. Well, okay, then address crime and domestic abuse, not violating the Constitution.
Well, you have
so
to-
this one I always stand on as being against. And then this is also going to lead into to making sure everybody's following the law. It turns into statewide gun registries, which we don't have here in Wyoming, but they always want these lists. Who has what guns? Who has how many guns? You know, where is it at right now? And I do not like that idea whatsoever. That's what they did before they went and, you know, started taking away people's liberties and then take away their guns. They developed the lists first.
Now, you just hit the nail on the head, and this is exactly what I was going to bring up, that this is an attempt to create an overall list of all firearms owners. That's exactly what it is. Because, and think about this, Joey, in Wyoming, they say that Wyoming has the most guns per capita, or rather like number one or number two or whatever. But that's just guns they know about. The vast majority of firearms owners have at least one firearm in their collection that was given to them by their dad, or that they bought from a private party, or something of that nature. You know, just about everybody that I know of that has any sort of gun collection has one of those. This was my grandpa's Wingmaster shotgun, you know, something like that. So if you go to sell that, the government wants to make sure it's on a list somewhere, so they know exactly where all of the guns are. Now, I can answer one of your questions that you brought up, and this was written this way to ensnare people. That is, if I own a gun that you want to buy under this rule, and you've just been drooling over it for 10 years, and you've been after me, and finally you just wear me down, and I say, okay, Joey, I'll sell it to you. And so under this rule, we would have to take my firearm down to the local sporting goods store. And literally, this is how the process works. I would have to relinquish that firearm to the gun store. So really, they own it. So they run the background check, and this is the only way that they can legally do this. They run the background check, it comes back clean, and then they can say, okay, you can proceed with the sale. So at that point, that gun has ended up on a list. And so really, it's an attempt for gun registration. The left has been trying this for a very long time. Now, there really isn't a silver lining to this whole thing. However, you can be absolutely certain that Gun Owners of America is going to sue over this. They've pretty much been in court like every single day with the Biden administration. And interestingly enough, our pal Mark Jones from Johnson County, who is running against Poisonberry Crago, has been one of the point men on lots of these lawsuits. And so, I mean, he really has been fighting for your Second Amendment rights. And this is another case. And I haven't spoken to him about this, but I can almost guarantee that he's going to be in court about this thing. So it does have a lot of implications to Wyoming and to every gun owner everywhere. So we've got to really make sure that our elected representatives are definitely supporting the Second Amendment, that they're defending the Second Amendment, which means that whole package that's posted on cowboystatepolitics.com, all of the roll call votes from Senate File 109, why that's really, really important, because it tells you who exactly supports your Second Amendment rights and who doesn't. If anybody on that list voted in favor of any one of those amendments, that's an anti-Second Amendment vote, and it tells you exactly who they are. I'm talking about you, Bill Henderson.
Oh, conservatism is a pesky pastime. Anyway, good old Bill. Hopefully we won't have to deal with him. I know you love your sound bites from him, but I wouldn't mind seeing that guy go back to private industry.
No, man, he dropped the ball. He didn't give me my sound bite.
Yeah, well, he's shown his value, and it's very low. We don't need him around. We're not getting what we need from him. So now we've been talking about owning, acquiring, selling, transferring guns, but there's also another interesting story about carrying guns in Wyoming, specifically in government buildings and schools. We had the whole debate and debacle over House Bill 125. Of course, the governor vetoed that. Thanks, Marky Mark. But now there's a conversation going on. This week they had a meeting of the State Building Council, which again is the top five elected officials, and they're discussing the potentiality of making rules about the Constitution that says we can carry firearms and own and bear and all that good stuff without infringement in the state capitol. So it's not House Bill 125. It's not all public areas, not all public buildings, but they are starting to have the conversation about carrying firearms in some government buildings. And I had a problem with a few of the comments that were made during this meeting, especially because it seemed to go down a trail of, because the state capitol is managed by different agencies, different portions of the building, it would have to be piecemeal. This department has this rule. This department has this rule. That office allows this. That office can't allow this. And what I'm seeing is, at least in practice, a violation of the preemption law that was signed by Governor Gordon to say, no, we can't have this patchwork of laws across the state. Yet you're engaging in a conversation and advocating for a patchwork of laws across a single building because, we don't manage that portion of the Capitol. Hey, guess what manages all of it? The Constitution that says we have the right to bear arms. So I don't know what your take on that was, but Chuck Gray, continued to pick up the ball and swing the bat and all that good stuff, saying House Bill 125 failed, but we still need to address this. The first thing that's interesting to me is that the State Building Commission apparently are the ones that set this rule and policy that violates our constitutional right to carry. I'm not surprised that the governor, Go Green Gordon, sits at the head of that. But this has been a rule since about 2001, no deadly weapons in the Capitol. And I think they're missing the point of the argument. It's not that we want to carry guns in the Capitol. It's that we want our state government to recognize that we have a God-given liberty that is protected by not only the U.S. Constitution, but the Wyoming Constitution, shall not be infringed, shall not be denied. And they're still walking around, slowly trickling back to the recognition of liberty. And now they're saying, well, maybe there's some places in the Capitol that we could have it. No, this is not a piecemeal deal. And if it is, then that's further violation of a law our own governor signed.
Yeah, this one's a big mess. And I mean, I'm very thankful that Chuck Gray, Secretary of State Chuck Gray, brought this up at the building commission or the SLIB board or wherever they were at. Oh, incidentally, Next Wednesday on the program, I'll have an interview with Secretary of State Chuck Gray, and I'll publish it the Wednesday right before the convention. So be looking forward to that. But this whole thing is a big, gigantic mess. Like, as you described, Joey, the state capitol is broken up into which department controls which part of the building. And it is literally written down to the square footage. I mean, it is the most bizarre thing that anybody's ever heard of. So if you want to know why Albert Sommers was in charge of the whole Clark Stith violating 913-105 in the House of Representatives, well, that's because that's the House chamber. And it's the Speaker of the House that has jurisdiction over that part of the Capitol building. But if you go down a floor, which is the governor's office, and it is directly below the House of Representatives, the governor has control over that office. Or if you go back up to the second floor and into the LSO office, the head of the LSO, that guy's name is Matt Obrecht, he has control over that office. Or on the complete other end of the hall, we can talk about Senate President Ogden Driscoll. So, like you said, Joey, the state capitol is broken up into a whole bunch of different jurisdictions, if you will. Secondly, there is no law that says you can't carry a firearm in the Capitol building. It's not a law. It's not in statute. It's a policy. That's all that it is. Now, I don't know of any governor that can just write a policy about your constitutional rights, but apparently in Wyoming, a governor did that. I don't know if it was Mark Moonbeam Gordon or if it was, you know, some other governor, but a governor wrote a policy that says you can't carry your firearms in the Capitol building. Now, another good point you brought up was the whole preemption law, that state law preempts any local law, which that would cover the policy of the Speaker of the House or the governor or the president of the Senate or that moron that controls LSO. Actually, Matt Obrecht isn't a moron. He's pretty devious, but state law preempts all of that. And there is no state law that says you can't carry a firearm in the Capitol building. Now, I wouldn't suggest trying to walk in there armed. There's state troopers that are crawling all over that place. And, you know, I think, Joey, you had an incident where, you know, you walked in the building to get some constitutions and happened to be carrying a firearm. Which, by the way, you know, if you carry a concealed weapon, that's like getting dressed in the morning. Right, you actually feel a little bit naked if you're not carrying your firearm, if you're used to it all the time. So think about it, right? You stop by the state capitol, all you're doing is grabbing a couple constitutions, and you're out there. And if you walk right up the capitol steps in the front, the Secretary of State's office is, I mean, you walk right in the front door, and it's the second office on the right. But so anyway, you pull up there, you're just going to grab some constitutions, and you're out. Well, if it were me, I mean, I have to make a conscious effort to say, oh, wait, I'm carrying my firearm. I can't have it in this building. But if you screw up, like I said, there's state troopers that are crawling all over that place. So there's a likelihood you're going to get stopped all over a policy. So good on Chuck Gray for, you know, starting the conversation. But I was a little disturbed by something that Governor Gordon said. I'm glad we're having the conversation that we can talk about where it's appropriate to carry firearms. Who is the governor to tell me what's appropriate and not when it comes to the Second Amendment? The governor doesn't have jurisdiction over the Constitution, nor should he. Governor Gordon needs to go back to his office and stop monkeying with my Constitution.
Yeah, well, maybe he'd feel better if you could get your firearms to wear a mask.
Yeah, maybe
that's
so.
That's one of his favorite policies.
Yeah.
This policy has been in effect since 2001 due to an executive order from former Governor Jim Geringer that clarified no deadly weapons may be carried on any state premises by members of the public. Pretty interesting because that's U.S. Constitution, Second Amendment, Wyoming Constitution, shall not be infringed, shall not be denied, but we can make an executive order doing that. But we know how governors are with their executive orders. You know, I wasn't allowed to go to work or start a business for a while because of our governor. But 18 years later, in 2019, the legislature passed a law specifying that the state building council may make rules for how the Capitol complex specifically is used by the executive branch and oversee all future construction plans on the ground. So that's how they did it. That's how they slipped it in to statute, was during the final phases of the Capitol being rebuilt, what do you call it, renovated. They said, well, we got to make sure that we know how to, we have a very clear path of who's running this, who's in charge, who's responsible. And they slipped this authorization to deny you your rights of firearms into a bill about management of the new Capitol after construction. And they gave it to the State Building Council. Now, granted, the governor is the chairman of that. But again, why wouldn't you just be able to come out and do a bill that says, hey, we're going to ban firearms in all these places, because your signs aren't authorized. There's nothing saying you can't carry a gun in your town hall. You might have a local ordinance, but that's even worse. Where does your town council get off saying, yeah, screw the U.S. Constitution? So I definitely hear you on that. It's an interesting argument. I hear a lot of complaints about, well, we may have to change the rules annually because the Capitol, it gets its most traffic during the legislative session. And that's also when the tensions are highest. And we don't want to see people getting into gunfights in the hallways just because they're allowed to carry guns. And I don't think a lot of these people have experience with firearms. They're not trained in any type of response situation. And even Bob Nicholas was in there testifying of, you know, I don't know how people think that they're going to react appropriately. And then when the time comes to deal with it, they just always do the wrong thing. I'm like, did you ever read the Constitution and see the part where it said, shall not be infringed unless you're properly trained and make Bob Nicholas comfortable and know exactly what to do in every single situation? Because I've never seen that part. They're not talking about liberty. They are legislating and, I don't know, administrating from a position of fear. And that is never effective. So it'll be interesting to see what's going on. State Treasurer Kurt Meyer says, if any of this does come to fruition, he would like to see certain areas of the Capitol have increased security, specifically because the concealed carry, authorization is there. I'd be interested in knowing why he thinks people aren't already carrying in the Capitol, and where's that security concern right now? It's a strange conversation, and the fact that it has to go to these offshoot councils and hospital boards. And I hear there's another group, I don't know which board, I can't remember the story, in Casper. They're also talking about possibly discussing their firearms policy. And on its face, great, I'm glad they're having that conversation. In reality, none of these groups should be having to have that conversation. You have no authority over this issue. And you issuing a policy saying, okay, yeah, we'll allow you to carry firearms within these left and right limits, this is the policy, you can do this, but you can't do that, that's just as bad in my mind as a concealed carry permit. It is still a massive affront to the Second Amendment. The Second Amendment says shall not be infringed. We've had repeated Supreme Court cases that say, no, it's an individual right. No, it can't be your current interpretation or, you know, what is it, the issue of the day? Oh, this happened with a firearm, so now we have to react. No, how would the founders have seen the issue of the firearm? And again, I think we're going down what they call that slippery slope, saying the bathroom on the east end of the Capitol complex is carry friendly. The bathroom on the west end is no firearms. I mean, how are you going to, even if you get a system that says, okay, these are the established areas where you can carry in the Capitol, it still comes down to the people being aware, informed, and allowing that to be applied to them. I think they're out of their minds. There's many capitals or states with capitals around us that have, you know, open and concealed carry in their capitals. And, you know, the reddest, most conservative state in the nation, supermajority Republican-run Wyoming, can't seem to understand fundamental liberties.
Exactly right. Now, our pal Ken is fond of pointing out that the lowest crime rate for any demographic is concealed weapons owners, or people who carry concealed weapons. The crime rate among those people is even lower than the police. If you are going to carry a concealed weapon, most people that do carry concealed weapon, and I'm willing to say 90% of people that carry concealed are fully trained. I wouldn't say fully trained, but they've at least had some sort of firearms training, whether it's, you know, at their local gun range or they've gone through a concealed carry class. But those folks are the most conscientious and responsible people that you're going to meet. And the reason for it is if you're carrying a concealed weapon, you do or you should know exactly where you can't carry it. Because if you're caught in that area carrying a concealed weapon, not only are you probably going to jail, but you may get charged with a felony. It's a possibility that you might lose your gun rights. So you're not going to do that, right? But the statistics bear it out that the lowest crime rate among any demographic is concealed weapons owners. Now, during this whole debate on House Bill 125, the arguments on the floor were absolutely amazing in that there were the most grandiose scenarios cooked up by these redcoats. Well, you know, there's going to be this pack of really crazy people, and they're going to come into the Capitol, and they're going to shoot us all. Okay, none of that is going to happen. There are state capitals, as you mentioned, Joey, all across the United States where you can walk in with a loaded AR-15 and sit in the gallery and watch this whole thing. And it's just, I mean, their scenarios are not even realistic. Now, let me give you one that I personally witnessed where I really wished that I had my firearm on me. It was not this past session, but the session before. This crazy lady comes into the Capitol. And I mean, the reason I say crazy is she went first over to the Senate and started screaming at the floor. The lady was disheveled looking and not exactly coherent. So the state troopers escort her out of the Senate, not out of the Capitol building, out of the Senate. And the reason for doing that is she was disrupting the proceedings. She then comes over to the House gallery and does the exact same thing, screaming at the people on the floor. And it got me thinking, okay, now what if this crazy person was carrying a gun? I mean, you look down on the floor, and that's like fish in a barrel, man. And not even the legislators are technically allowed to carry firearms, though I'm sure that there are some of them that are packing a gun down there. I'm pretty sure if I were down there, I would think very seriously about packing a gun. But those situations exist. And what I'm getting at is the only way to stop a bad guy with a gun is with a good guy with a gun. And, you know, all of their arguments about roving bands of crazy people trying to overtake the Capitol, I mean, that's just their argument to push their particular variety of gun control. Because essentially, that's what this whole thing is. You know, if you're saying, well, you can't carry a gun in the House chamber, but you can carry a gun in the Senate, but don't even think about it carrying it in the LSO, that's just individual little tyrants trying to exact their own particular version of gun control. That's all that it is.
Yeah, no doubt in my mind that it will be concerning, depending on who's in what office on what day even. Could be, well, if the governor is going to be over in the Secretary of State's office, then you can't have guns in there during that time. No, black and white constitutional policies. And the thing about, you know, what you call the crazy lady, she could have been just as dangerous with a firearm standing right outside the Capitol where she's completely allowed to carry. You know, time and place, it doesn't dissuade an individual who has an agenda. But I think by saying, you know, people can carry guns in the Capitol or anywhere, you know, that the Constitution absolutely provides for, does make people think twice. You know, these people are not freedom fighters. They're not martyrs. They're out there to probably get their 15 minutes of fame and think that they're going to make a change that they're unwilling to go through the process and make properly. So I have no problem even knowing that I could run into a bad guy with a gun. I can already run into a bad guy with a gun doing 90% of my operations outside of government or school areas anyway. But before we get out of here, speaking of bad guys with guns, let's get back to the wolf torturer for a quick second. I got a Facebook post sent to me today with a picture of a woman standing in a bar with her own mouth taped shut, holding the skin of the wolf in the Green River Bar in Daniel, Wyoming. And the caption says, "Aunt of the wolf torturer, Jeannie Ivy Roberts, mocks the baby wolf with her own mouth taped shut while she is draped in her skin And she said, well, this was set as her profile picture until she deleted it. Couple things. This situation keeps getting worse because of the idiocy of this, not only individual, but now his family. That's going to make it a little harder again to argue for anything that us responsible hunters, just Wyoming citizens, you don't even have to be involved in wildlife. You know, we're painted a certain way. But I would say now that this wolf, we have photographs of this wolf being skinned out and displayed, this is no longer the taking or the possession of a wolf illegally for $250. This is poaching.
I don't know. Was that the skin of that wolf or was that a different skin of a different wolf?
I'm not getting a whole lot of detail on that, but it says the mocks the poor wolf. Yeah, I don't really know.
The reason I say that, Joey, is not enough time has passed to be able to tan that hide. I mean, you can't tan a hide overnight. But the way I took that is this.
Oh no, it still has leg bones in it. It's not. It's only fleshed out. It's not processed.
Oh, okay.
You can see there's still bones in the leg and stuff. So it was just kind of the. And of course, I'm speculating here, but either way, it definitely doesn't look good. And it's going to make the conversation we're going to be having in the near future much more difficult because of the idiocy of the lifelong friends of Albert Summers, who he thinks are really good people.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you this thing is just getting worse and worse and worse. And okay, so I think it's interesting that in the picture, her mouth was taped shut. Because to me, that's a statement saying, hey, look, you're trying to attack all of us here. And yes, Cody Roberts did a very, very bad thing and it was inhumane and all of that. But that doesn't mean that we need to have a special session or that we need to, change all of Wyoming law because of one instance. But I would say that things are definitely getting out of hand. If you read the comments on that post, I mean, they're pretty crazy. And it's, you know, I'm not even going to repeat some of them because, I mean, there's a couple of them that are pretty vile on there. But everybody just needs to take a breath and tone this thing down. The guy's going to get punished. And, you know, they're investigating the whole situation. And he should be prosecuted according to Wyoming law. And whether you think the punishment is too lenient or maybe you think the punishment is too severe, that's immaterial to the argument. The law needs to be followed, you know, administer the law the way it's supposed to be, and then we can have a discussion later about animal cruelty or, you know, there's lots of statutes about poaching and, you know, just shooting an animal, leaving it lay, that's a big crime. Shooting an animal out of season. Shooting an animal and just taking the head, that's a bad deal. So there are lots of Wyoming statutes and, you know, this is one of those instances where we just need to take a breath, take a step back and just let the law work. And then we'll deal with whatever we have to deal with later. If the legislature wants to change some laws, okay, fine. I'm not going to say that it's spinning out of control, but just reading the comments, holy crap, man.
And that's what I'm more worried about, the public reaction, because it was stated in an earlier story, the only reason this has gone any further than the $250 fine is because of public outcry, which also pisses me off. If it's a crime, it should be investigated anyway. If there's sheriff's departments out there or the Game and Fish waiting to see how pissed off the public gets to do their job, I got a problem. I also think we should have a class. How not to post your crimes and idiocy on social media 101, because that obviously makes the situation worse. But I think we're just about to the end of it here. I am going to take the rest of the day. We got a special 2-hour episode of Wide Right Turn coming up at 11 a.m. getting into the Code of the West and cowboy ethics. What do you got today, David?
Well, I've got a whole, again, a kind of a patchwork of different stories across the country. I'll probably give you an update on the whole drag queen thing. As you might have guessed, there was another drag show that happened, so I'll be talking about that. But don't miss a minute of the Independence Network.